What's up, everybody? It's Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you're tuned into Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in. As always, it is appreciated. This week on the show, we have an old buddy of mine that you guys have been asking for forever. So, I'm happy to announce that Dumbfounded is going to be on the show this week, which you probably already know because you read the title and I'm stupid. But first and foremost, follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, at I am database, based with two S's. You can follow us on Twitter as a unit at That's Kinda Neat. Facebook.com/KindaNeat. YouTube.com/That's Kinda Neat. And everything wrapped up together in a pretty package at KindaNeat.net. I was talking to my friend Adam the other day online. Adam is a dude that I met my freshman year of college. I went to University of Alaska Fairbanks for my first year on an academic scholarship. I'm not trying to brag or anything, but I'm pretty smart. I went on an academic scholarship. And so, it was a transitional time in technology, you know, iPads and iPods and iPhones weren't quite there yet. I mean, cell phones weren't even really a thing then. I'm that old. But that year I did get my first laptop. I grew up, I've always been a man that likes to enjoy his time in the office, you know, that office with like the notepaper on a roll to your right hand side, you know, the throne, some people call it the throne, but yeah, I like to sit and take my time while I'm handling my business. And, I grew up always being a reader. So I used to keep like, you know, we either had Highlights or Reader's Digest, or my dad would have a random Stephen King book sitting around that I might read. But I was always a reader, and that made me very patient while I was handling my biz. And then I got my first laptop in my freshman year in college. And I remember a lot of the guys in my dorm would clown on me because I used to go into the bathroom and I would take my laptop and some headphones. And it was when Napster was first really big. So like I would fucking download a bunch of music from Napster. And then I would just go sit on the toilet and play Solitaire or Free Cell and listen to music the whole time. They'd be like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, yeah, man, I'm chilling. This is how I handle biz. I am fucking chilling. And, lo and behold, by the end of the year, it became a thing like where all the dudes on my floor, they would just go in there and they were taking their laptop and they were chilling. And they're like, that's not such a bad idea. It's like that Seinfeld episode where like George Costanza takes in a book into the toilet. It's like a $500 book at a Borders or something. And they're like, you can't take that in the toilet. You have to buy that now. If it's your own property, it doesn't matter if it goes in the bathroom with you. Like the shit particles are only getting on your own shit. So it doesn't matter. But yeah, so I used to like to do that. And I just think it's crazy that nowadays technology has advanced so much that it went from like me taking a laptop to now I can do all the same shit on an iPhone, because I literally like download books, put them on my iPhone, got podcasts, headphones, music, video games, like much more advanced video games than Free Cell too. Shout out to Plants vs. Zombies 2. Come at me. I don't think you could fuck with me on it, truthfully. But yeah, so it's awesome. Technology is awesome because it's made fucking shitting way more fun. To just take your laptop. I mean, you should just take your phone on the shitter. That's terrible. But yeah, Dumbfounded, we had him on. And I know that a lot of you guys think that, oh, Intuition and Dumbfounded have beef and all this. And like, truthfully, that was never the case. Like, we're just not people to put our business out in the air like that. But we've always been friends and have remained friends. And, so this is a chance to kind of let you guys see that and be in the same room again, or to be in the same room at the same time. And we just played a show together on Sunday. Thank you guys so much for coming out. It was fucking awesome. Mike, James, me, Dumb, we all had a great time, and I think a lovely time was had by all. But yeah, so John's going through a transitional period right now. He's changing his name. He's now known as Parker, which is why it says Parker on the title of this, not Dumbfounded. It says Parker. I have to remind myself of that, so I remember to write it when I post this. But yeah, he's going through a transitional phase. He's changing his name. It's a new time in his life. And I think we talk about that a little bit. We talk about where we're trying to go. We talk a lot about his past, which is very interesting. And the one common theme that always runs through this podcast with successful people is hard work. And I think we talk about, you know, a lot of John's hard work over the time that he's been doing this. And I think it was an interesting conversation. And I learned some stuff that I didn't know about him, even though I've known him for quite a while. And so I think you guys will enjoy yourselves. And, I've never really aired out anything about what happened with Knock City. And I still don't think that I am going to. I'm not going to right now, that's for certain. But we both do mention that neither of us are associated with Knock City anymore. So when you guys hit us up and ask us, how can we be signed to Knock City, or like, you know, this, that, and the other, like, we don't really have any help for you in that matter. The most I will say is that things didn't end well with me and Knock Steady, but that has nothing to do with Jonathan. I wish them the best, and I learned a lot from them. And so yeah, I don't know. Without any further ado, we're going to get in the conversation with my man, Parker, formerly known as Dumbfounded, whom I know as Jonathan, who used to be known as Chino. Here's the conversation. Yeah.
What's up, Ben?
I like your shirt, bro.
What's up, bro? Just like old times.
Hey, that reminds me. What's up, Ben? Like we were talking about, I'll fight you. Yeah. I love when people like shout out Ben in the videos. Yeah. You know, like it's so funny. Like Mike last week was like, "Yo, Ben, it's pitch day." That shit's tight. Anyhow, what's up, man? That's a nice shirt.
Thank you, bro.
Where'd you get it?
Lifted Anchors. These kids who just make some cool shit.
Yeah,
they gave me their whole collection.
Are they in New York?
No, they're here.
Yeah, people love giving you collections. I'm like people that I'm friends with, they don't give me their collection. They're like, let's give John the collection, because if he Instagrams it, people will buy it.
No, it's funny. I feel like it's not even really fully worth giving me a whole collection, because like they don't realize the return is not that great.
Right.
But still, I appreciate it, and I will wear it in videos. But
yeah,
I'm
looking at you, Serp and fucking Alex. Give me some clothes.
Yeah, I love their shit. Their shit is so funny, man.
I feel like the Ain't Nobody Cool thing is a really good idea.
I love it.
Like, dude, their line is really clever.
It's so fucking weird.
It's weird, and it's awesome, and like it's very relevant to what's happening right now, and it's funny.
I like those dudes, man. Cool.
Everybody wants to start a t-shirt company nowadays, just like everybody wants to be a rapper, and the chances of it working are about equal.
Yeah,
like it's very pipe dreamy.
No, it's tough, yo. Like we did that similar thing, and we actually was pretty successful.
It was doing good.
I mean, we were pretty successful for, you know, us not knowing really.
Yeah,
just for that was like was. We weren't coming from the streetwear world and shit. You know what I'm saying? I'm not at what. Not
we
that
was
it was
coming from these streets. Yeah, so what have you been up to, man? You're going through a name change right now. Let's hit that on the head first, because people on my Facebook ask me about your name change constantly, and I don't know.
I don't know, man. I don't know either, really. I mean, really, it's like I obviously, you know, when you see me putting Parker on all my titles and stuff, like you think like, oh yeah, this dude's like conflicted and shit.
Yeah,
which I am, man. Like the name thing has always kind of been a thing with me.
Well, I've always said that like a name change always seems like a last ditch effort, and so that's what scares me about it. Is like,
what do you mean?
It seems like it seems like I'm out of ideas.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm very confident with like what I'm trying to put out. I'm always have future projects in mind and shit like that. It's just something that I want to start doing now, and I was kind of easing into it for months. Like if you saw my screen names and stuff, I had it as Parker without any explanation, you know, and I was just slowly doing it. But my main thing is like, yeah, first of all, like I always felt like Dumbfounded was like kind of like a super long name.
Same as Intuition. I hate my rap name.
For some reason, I don't see it as bad with yours for some reason. Mm. Like it just sounds like kind of cool to me. But like Dumbfounded, like if you shorten Dumbfounded, it's dumb, first of all.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, to me, I kind of got used to it when people call me dumb.
Yeah.
But still, it's like.
You are a man of many names. When I met you, you were Chino.
Yeah.
I thought that was your real name because I'm not from LA and I didn't realize it was just some slang for a fucking Asian person.
Well, I've had a lot of things like Korean Jesus, Old Boy John, like little things like that.
Well, those are all names that you gave to yourself, so they don't count.
Yeah.
Like Chino was just some like real, like.
Chino was a real
like,
ass
I'm from Los Angeles and people call me that because I'm Korean.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, but even that, if you think about it, it's crazy. Like, I literally went by Chino all my life, bro.
Yeah.
And then, like, I don't even, it's so weird when somebody calls me Chino now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't feel like it's so crazy with Parker either, but I don't know.
I like Parker because I used to like that show Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Yeah, I know.
Were you down with that?
I knew about it. I didn't know much about it, but I'm like, Mike's been hitting me with that. I'm like, okay, I don't know what that means.
I love that show. It was kind of, Parker Lewis was kind of like a Zach Morris type dude.
Okay.
He was like Zach Morris mixed with Inspector Gadget, kind of like he had this fucking, he was a cool guy that had a trench coat that had all kinds of like cool shit in it that would like get him out of trouble. You should go back and watch
kinda
it.
Kind of like Data. I mean,
yes, it's very exactly. So you are the Korean Parker. You are Data.
I am Data.
Yeah. There's I am Database back there.
Yeah, there he is. There he is. Good old Ben.
You know what I love about Korean people is Korean moms always have gadgets. And so when it was really hot during the summer, Ben's mother gave him this pad where you sit on it and the pressure makes it cold. So like he was sitting on a butt chiller basically.
Oh,
but it's
God.
Like when it's just there, it's normal temperature and it doesn't turn cold until you apply pressure to it. And I was like, wow, man, Korean people, where do they get all these wonderful toys?
Those are definitely Korean gifts. And they'll try to relate it to how how it's like good for your body somehow. Like, it's good to keep your ass cold. Like, you know.
So yeah, you are Korean, but you have an interesting story where, like, I mean, you've talked about this all the time, but I want to touch on it briefly. Your mom coyoted you across the border as a child.
Yeah, yeah. My mom is a G.
So how did your parents end up in Argentina anyways?
My grandparents on my mom's side moved to Argentina when she was a teenager. I guess there was a huge immigration at the time there to South America, either for work or something.
Yeah.
And then my mom was probably around 14, 15 years old, and then she just grew up there.
Really?
Yeah, she grew up there. I mean, I kind of see that with her personality, too, because she's, like, really adventurous and, like, she's very youthful.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, she's mad cool. And my dad went there when...
She loves Carnival.
Yeah, the feathers and all shit. No, yeah. She goes down. I mean, my dad went down to Argentina in his early 20s.
Yeah.
For, like, the same reason, like, business or work or something. And... he just met my mom.
So there's
there.
A big Korean population in Argentina?
There is.
That's crazy.
There is. There's all over South America. There's Asians everywhere, you know, first of all. But there's neighborhoods of Asians in South America.
No, like, shit.
My uncle and aunt, they're all from Paraguay, which is right there by Argentina. So they all, like, spread across, like, South America. Like, that's my crazy. Grandpa is still in Argentina.
You go
right
down
now.
There and visit ever?
I don't, man. And I'm really, like, sad about that. Like, he's there with my uncle and they live together and... yeah, man, and I don't really know my uncle that well, you know, but he's like...
Is your mom's brother or your dad's brother?
My mom's younger brother. Yeah. And he, you know, like, he's been through a lot of shit. He's been alone for a long time. He's never had, like, a girlfriend or anything, but he just plays the guitar all day. Like, it's a trip, you
that
know
sounds like
saying?
A sad movie to write.
Yeah, but it's crazy, man.
You figure the guitar would get him some pussy.
No, the thing is, I've been trying to move out my grandpa and my uncle out to the States for a long time, you know what I'm saying? But, like... they just don't want to leave. They're just there, you know. My sister went and visited, and, like, she was like, whoa, it's a trip. Like, you know, she got to know my uncle, and she's like, oh, he's the coolest. Like, I'm planning a trip with my sister next year to go down there, so it's going to be cool.
Your sister's awesome.
Yeah, she is.
She is so cool.
She is the coolest
chick. And, like, she has the most hood tattoos. I love that
shit. Oh, my gosh. I just, like, you don't have no idea. Every time she posts a picture of a new tattoo on Facebook, I just put, like, SMH. Like, that's my response every time on Facebook, bro. Like,
well, I mean, like, she's got, like, legit tattoos that, like, are some, I've been wanting this and now I have it. And they're not designer tattoos. Like, you got a designer tattoo. Your chest is a designer tattoo. You got that rock shit.
Yeah, no, my whole thing about tattoos, I don't, you know, when people get tattoos, it's fine. And I never judged anybody for tattoos.
As you
know?
You shouldn't.
I don't. But, like, there's some shit that my sister has. That brings, like, the conservativeness out of me that I'm just like, what the fuck, man?
Like, does she have, like, a big, like, she has, like, California tattooed across her stomach?
She
or
has
something?
Los Angeles tattooed across her chest with downtown city landscape behind
Hell
Los Angeles,
yeah.
Dude.
Like, your sister's like a Korean chola.
Yeah, I mean,
super tight.
In a sense, she's really cooler than me and technically has cooler tattoos than me if you really think about it. Like, she just does not give a fuck. And, like, it's very L.A. She's more L.A. than people who try to get L.A. tattoos because she's getting it from fools who are, like, really L.A. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, James and I were talking about that. Like, your sister's just so genuine, you know what I'm saying? Like, she is what she is.
She's mad cool.
Yeah, so she went down to Argentina and had a good time or what?
Yeah, like, you know, she literally was like, I'm just going to go down there, like, save money. This was when she was, like, working at Whole Foods for, like, a long-ass time. And that's all she was doing. She was just, like, stacking chips. And then going on a trip somewhere. Like, she'll go, like, to India by herself.
She worked in the chip section?
The pita chip section. No, like, she'll literally just stack and, like, just take these trips on her own. Like, imagine going to India fucking alone, bro. Like, that's intense, dude.
Yeah, that's crazy. Why is your uncle lonely? Like, what's up with him? He's got some, like...
He has, like a brain thing. He's a little slower and stuff. Yeah. So, but he's been with my grandpa. He's been there living with my grandpa for, like, a long time. He's an older dude, but he's a little bit slower.
Grandma passed or something?
Yeah, my grandma passed, like, I don't know, like 5 to 7 years ago or something like that. And, I've always been super close to my South American, grandpa and stuff. When he used to come visit the States, LA and shit, like, he was just, like, mad cool, super, always trying to learn English. Like, his Spanish was crazy, you know.
Yeah. So your mom, like, she speaks Spanish and Korean, right?
Yeah, my mom, you know, her Spanish is crazy.
Like, and her English isn't that good.
No, no. Like, when, you know, my dad too, my dad speaks Spanish and Korean.
Yeah.
But they're both of their English is not like that crazy because they're in L.A.
Yeah. You know, in L.A. You don't really have to.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, particularly in Koreatown, you can survive on Spanish and Korean.
Right, right. Yeah. And my dad and my mom, they were doing business in downtown with wholesale and stuff, which is like really common for a lot of Korean people in K-Town. They work wholesale in downtown where they sell like cheap toys and shit, like jewelry for like, you know, wholesale price and
right.
stuff.
Right. Like your dad worked in like the doll section?
He's still there. He's in the toy district.
At the toy district, yeah. Right.
And they do wholesale business stuff. And over there, it's just all dealing with Latinos.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and there's Koreans there who do the wholesale business, but the consumers are mainly Latino. So
So he's selling like bootleg toys like Robot Cop instead of RoboCop?
Yeah, dude. When I grew up always being at my dad's store because, you know, they never have, Asians don't have babysitters, bro. We don't have fucking babysitters.
Right.
We just go to work with them and shit.
Yeah.
So we're there. And I remember when I was growing up, I would just, you know, be there, help them out and stuff. They would have bootleg Teletubbies because that was cracking at the time.
Yeah.
Spice Girls dolls.
Yeah.
And like Pokemon stuff. And it was crazy that like downtown would have raids from like the dudes who regulate all the bootleg shit.
Oh, no shit.
And they would just swipe just mad shit.
They're like, we're getting rid of all your Smell-O-Tubbies.
Yeah. There were times where I remember like other stores were getting raided and we'd get a call like, yo, they're coming, blah, blah, blah.
And just hide everything.
We would help like move everything to the back warehouse and shit. Like it was crazy.
They're like, quick, hide all the Pumpkin Spice Girls.
Yeah. It was crazy, man. The bootleg toys, but they would sell. I remember.
Yeah. That's crazy. So you're growing up in K-Town. I mean, at the time, when you were a kid, K-Town's pretty hood. At the time, it wasn't starting to get gentrified yet, or what?
Yeah, I mean, you know, downtown, I mean, K-Town, I never considered K-Town to be really hood, like South Central hood.
Yeah.
But, like, as I got older and stuff, I was like, it's kind of hood, because as I started really going to other places, you know, like, South Central and, like, places like that could be really hood, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, I thought K-Town wasn't that hood, but when I compared it to actually other neighborhoods, I was like, this shit is kind of hood.
Yeah, like, oh, I mean, like, I live in Culver City, and right, when I drive through K-Town, it's like, it seems much more fucking hood than, you know, like, when you're driving down Alvarado, that's like...
Yeah.
You know, when the shops are set up on the sidewalk and shit, it looks like you're driving through Tijuana or something.
There's definitely hood elements, man. I would say, like, you know, I mean, when I grew up in K-Town, you know, what's funny, when I was younger, I didn't grow up with a lot of Korean kids. You know, the funny thing about Koreatown, a lot of the Koreans don't even come from Koreatown itself. They're coming from Glendale, like, you know, a valley, like, and they just party in Koreatown because it's the biggest Korean neighborhood.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The kids who come from Koreatown are grimy, bro.
Yeah.
Like, I know, we all know each other when we go out to K-Town, and there's only a selected few that actually live, like, down the street. And those fools are, like, hood, bro.
The Korean thugs.
Yeah, they're hood, man.
No, you can spot them out when you're at a bar in K-Town, too, I feel like, because they're not as clean cut as the ones coming from Glendale and shit.
It's a trip, man. It's definitely a trip. Like, it's cool. Like, when I grew up in K-Town, it was a lot of the kids on my block, a lot of Latino kids, random black kids.
Yeah.
One like Native American dude for some reason, he was there. He was in the mix. And then I got older and I kind of partaked in the nightlife culture, because I think K-Town is more about the nightlife and you can't really enjoy that until you get a little older.
Yeah, Korean nightlife is fucking pretty crazy. I've experienced that secondhand through you and it is very different.
Yeah, there's bitches.
There are. And I mean, you can fucking smoke inside and you can stay out until 6 if you want to.
Yeah, it's true.
It's crazy. It's been trill.
I said it's true.
But. Oh, it's true. But it is trill as well. Didn't you say like you used to go to like an elementary school and you just always, it was just a very hood elementary school or something, or like you went to a scary high school and shit?
Yeah. I mean, a high school. My high school was like, I went to Belmont High School.
What was elementary school like for you?
Elementary was all right. I went to Laurel Elementary, and Laurel Elementary, I forgot what area it is. I want to say it's around the Fairfax area, because there was a lot of Russian kids and I think Jewish kids.
Like Orthodox Jews and shit?
Yeah, but it was a public school. But I just remember there was a lot of Russian kids for some reason. I forgot what area it is. I got to look it up. It's Laurel Elementary.
I mean,
Elementary.
That sounds about right. If it's Fairfax, it has a big like Russian population.
Yeah, I mean, that was just, I mean, to me, I didn't think of it anything like that.
Did you ever like school?
Man, you know, honestly, I'm not going to lie. I don't think I ever liked school, honestly.
Yeah.
I look back even to elementary and middle school. I did really well up until like 7th grade. it was just like downhill from there for some reason.
Yeah.
Like I didn't graduate on stage in middle school.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like I got in trouble like fucking right before my graduation.
Because what age did you drop out?
I dropped out in the end of 10th grade.
End of 10th grade.
Yeah.
Because I always used to clown like, oh, Dove Vada can't read and shit like that. Like what, were you a good student as a kid?
When I was younger, elementary to middle school. And yeah. then I gotta tell you right now, and even in elementary and middle school, I remember I didn't really like school that much. I liked it for certain reasons. I liked it that I could participate and just like crack a joke in
class. I was gonna ask, were you already like a class clown even as a kid?
When I was in fucking elementary, I remember I was a class clown. Yeah. I was a super class clown and attention whore. When I see those kids now, like the ones that wild out, like, look at me. I get annoyed as shit. And I was that kid, dude. Yeah. Like, I was that kid.
Like, I have a specific memory of like the first time I recognized that I like really cracked a good joke.
Yeah.
Like, do you have like a memory of like when you're like, oh shit, like cracking jokes is my shit. I've just made everybody laugh.
Yeah. In classrooms. I remember like I would participate, like when they would ask a question, I raise my hand and then they choose me and I just did like a joke or something. Yeah. Everybody laughed and my teacher was just like not so amused. Yeah. She was not amused, bro. Yeah. And then, you know, I would always get these speeches from teachers like, yo, you know, like, Jonathan, you're smart, but you know, you have potential, but you just don't, you know, like one of those things. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Did you ever participate in like clubs or anything like that in school? Did you play sports? You're very unathletic. You are very unathletic. I should have.
Well, you know what's funny? In middle school, I was actually like I was into basketball a lot. You know what I mean? So like during nutrition and lunch and stuff, we would always play basketball.
Yeah,
and I was never really that good. I'll tell you that much.
I could tell.
I was into skateboarding. I was into basketball. I was never good at shit, but I was actually like into athletic stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I was never good at it. I'm not gonna lie, but I was actually into like, you know, I wasn't like always like not wanting to do physical activity. Like even now, like I don't mind doing hiking or running. Like I like walking fucking long distances and shit. Like, you know, I used to run to the fucking office and shit, bro.
You get these harebrained ideas where you're like, dude, I'm going to start jogging to the office every day. And then you do it like 3 days and you're like, never mind.
Yeah, that's true. I do get excitable and I don't follow through often. That's true. Ben used to start giving me rides from my house when I just gave up on the running idea. Yeah. I was like, yo, pick me up. He's like, aren't you going to run? Nah.
Like, drop me off 2 blocks away and I'll pretend that I ran.
Fuck off.
So, like, did you start getting in trouble as a kid or what?
Yeah,
skip school? Did you ever do the school skipping?
Oh, my God. I did so much school, man. Yeah. I definitely, and this started in middle school. Like,
what would you guys do?
Because you see, like, middle school, they started busing me out to the Valley because all the L.A. schools were packed. Mm. So they would start busing out L.A. kids to the Valley schools. So every morning we would go to this bus stop, like down the street from my house to get an hour bus ride to the fucking Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they wouldn't even drop us off. We just walked to the bus stop in the morning and we could just pretty much do whatever we want because our parents aren't there. You know what I'm saying? As long as we fucking miss the bus, we could just ditch,
mm-hmm.
you know, and me and my sister, we would be ditching.
Where would you guys go?
We would actually just come right back to our house.
Oh, because your folks are at work?
They'd go to work, and then we would just literally wait until, like, a certain time they would go to work, and we'd just come back home and just stay home all day.
And then pretend that you had just gotten home when they get home?
There was some crazy moments where I remember my dad just unexpectedly came back, and we ran to the closet, and we just stayed there for, like, hours. Like, it was crazy. Because my dad was scary, yo. Like, if he knew, we would have been.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah, you've talked about it on your songs. Like, dad was a bit of a drinker or what?
Oh, my dad, yeah. He was, you know, it's crazy. He was definitely a scary man growing up. You know, like, it was crazy. Like with my parents, I've never seen them really happy together growing up since we were little. Like, mm-hmm. we were always like, what the fuck? How did these two even meet and shit?
Yeah,
I mean, it was crazy. It was like a stressful household to kind of come up in. And I think that kind of sparked the rebelliousness with me and my little sister. Like, I was bad, but my sister took it like times two when she was going through her rebellious teenager phase. You know what I mean? Like, it was crazy.
Yeah, for sure. So Korean parents are generally known as very strict. Would you say your dad was even stricter than normal or what?
Yeah. I mean, my dad was definitely up there regular, like, strict, you know, Asian parent. I mean, he was strict in a different way. Like, a lot of Asian parents could be strict and actually, like, really, like, on it. Like, they'll send you to the programs after school, SAT classes.
Like, positive reinforcement
type shit. Yeah, that kind of shit. My dad was more like, he didn't know what to do. He wasn't really, like, a great parent, like, in a sense where he wanted to care, but he's always gone, you know, work and shit. He comes back and he has a drinking problem. So like the only way he knew how to handle that is like being loud and violent and shit like that. You know
what
I'm saying?
Yeah, he had a heavy hand or what?
Yeah. That, you know, that was like a crazy experience. And, you know, there was a lot of shit with my mom and my dad, like violent stuff and crazy fights where cops came through. And
oh, no shit.
A lot of shit. Like, you know, I've seen brutal fights. I don't want to go into it because like I'm, you know, I have a good relationship with my dad now and stuff. But, you know, through his drinking phase, he was a very violent man, you know what I'm
like
saying?
Like belts on you and shit like that? Or
yeah, like, you know, bloody shit. Like,
really?
Yeah.
Was there stuff. A moment that you kind of put your foot down on that? Like, nah, you're not going to touch me no more? Or did it just kind of fade away?
I mean, it wasn't even about me. Like, I can take ass whoopings. You know what I'm saying? That wasn't a big deal. But it was like with my mom. Like, my mom went through some crazy shit with my dad. Like, I saw shit that it was beyond really just like slapping a girl. Like it was some crazy, it got really intense where I couldn't take that shit no more. And my sister was pretty young, so I don't think she remembers much, but definitely she, you know, she's seen that shit. And then after years, like it took years for me to really fix that relationship with my dad. Like I could not forgive him for a long, even my sister definitely couldn't forgive him for a long time. But we finally in the last few years was able to kind of you know, fix that relationship. Man, it was crazy. It's fucking nuts.
What age did they split up? How old were you when they split up?
Probably around 13 or 14 years old.
Yeah, and you stayed in the apartment with mom?
My mom moved out on her own, and at that time she was crazy struggling because she pretty much just had to take any kind of bullshit minimum wage job because like she literally had a thing with my dad was pretty much kind of taking care of her. You know, he had the store and everything, but she just had to leave, and she, you know, like, that was a tough situation because she left and she couldn't even take care of us. Like, it's not like she could take us with her, you know what I'm saying?
Because she could barely keep a roof over her head.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it was like a crazy time when my dad didn't even want me to talk to my mom. So we had to like call her like on her own. Like it was crazy. Yeah. It was crazy. And eventually that got fixed and, you know, we were able to figure that situation out.
I mean, when she left, did your dad realize like, oh man, I'm kind of fucking up. Like I should clean my act up or anything like that?
No, it was one of those things where, you know, with Korean parents, there's a lot of prideful things. Like they, you know, they've been split up for years now, and they're not divorced or anything. Like,
oh, really?
No, like they don't. You know that, and that has a lot to do with Korean stuff too. There's a lot of pride there. Like my dad couldn't accept that. Like they're split up, even. You know what I'm saying? He was for a long time was just like, "Yo, just come back."
Yeah.
Not even a sincere way. Come back. Like, yo, what are you doing?
Just like get your ass back over here.
Come back. What are you doing? Like.
Yeah.
So that was the situation for a super long time. And like, you know, it's just crazy. It was like a lot of crazy shit where, and then eventually me and my sister, we literally moved out on our own. Like, you know, when me and my little sister were living together for like, when I was like 18.
I remember that. That's around when I met you and you already had an apartment with your sister.
Yeah, and that was a time.
And coffee.
That was a way where like my dad at the time was like, you know, helping out. He was paying a rent. That was the kind of his way of like, you know, he didn't know how to be a good parent, so he was just like, here, go stay on your own. I'll pay the rent. You know what I mean? Make sure you guys are fed and shit. But
yeah.
So that was like a phase where me and my sister, we were going through, we were being really bad. You know what I'm saying? That's when we were like really wild.
So if you were 18, she must have been what, 15, 16?
16.
Yeah. And so she's still in high school, but living in her own apartment?
Yeah. I mean, my sister too, she kind of low-key dropped out because she started going to continuation school. You know what I'm saying? Like she was going to continuation, like, you know, she eventually, like, it was like more of like a GED thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, from there, you know, she went to community college. She's been doing the school thing. And now, you know, she's graduated. And like,
yeah. So by the time that you're talking about, like, oh, one time my dad came home and we hid in the closet, mom was already gone at that point?
She was working.
Okay. So when you get to high school, that's what you went to a bad high school.
Yeah.
What was high school like when you got there?
Belmont High School that I went to first was, that shit was 99% Latino.
Really?
Like, it was crazy, bro. Yeah. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen Belmont High School passing by. It's,
maybe.
When you go down Beverly, like, towards downtown, you see that big mural with dinosaurs and, like, the... That's the school.
Oh, okay.
So that's the school in there. And it's,
it kind of looks like a prison, doesn't it?
It looks straight up like a prison, bro. I remember, like, literally at lunchtime, the bell would ring and, you know, everybody was on the fucking lunch program.
Yeah.
You could go wait in line and you won't get to the front to get your lunch until the bell rings for the next class.
Wow.
Bro. Like, it was crazy. And, you know, all these young, like, 18 Street kids, MS kids, like, little ninth graders with, like, 18 Streets tatted on their necks,
get
bro.
Get the fuck out.
That shit was crazy, bro. I saw some crazy fights there. But It was cool because I grew up a Latino, so I already had like friends there.
You wait, time out. You grew up Latino.
I grew up with Latinos.
You're like, it was cool because I grew up Latino.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, literally the few Asian kids that went to that school were like exchange students, bro. Like they all barely spoke any English. Like I don't know how they ended up in that school.
Did the kind of like attention seeking and smart acidness get even stronger then to keep yourself like away from getting on people's bad sides?
I would definitely say my just talking skills got me out of a lot of ass whoopings.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. If you're in a tough place and you're not naturally a tough person, not to say that you're not a tough person, but you're kind of small, you're frail. But oftentimes you have to cope in other ways. And if you're a good talker and you're charming, you got to get yourself out of shit by cracking jokes, you know? So I'm sure you mastered a lot of material there.
Everybody has their defense mechanisms, you know, and that was definitely my shit. You know what I'm saying? I definitely, was cracking jokes, being witty and shit. And I knew how to deal with so many different ethnicities. You know what I'm saying? I think the last type of group of people that I really learned how to interact with was white people, actually. And even
I helped you with that.
Yeah. You're very socially aware, you know what I'm saying? Which is dope because I come from the battle rap world and you can tell when motherfuckers don't know shit about cultures because they sound blatantly racist.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
We've gone to
racist.
Yeah. We've gone to Grindtime events where we've seen dudes from the Midwest or different areas that might not have been around.
Yeah.
Different cultures that when they try to diss a culture, it comes off straight up racist.
Right. Like they don't know how to make fun of Mexican culture other than just saying beaner,
exactly,
which is terrible.
Exactly.
It's whereas you might take an angle about the various different salsas.
Right.
You know what I mean? The green sauce versus the red sauce. That's very informed about culture.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
And that's how you get them on your side too. You know what I'm saying?
Were there any close calls in high school where you really had to talk yourself out of ass whooping?
Oh yeah, man. I mean, I think one thing is I don't know when to shut up sometimes too.
Yeah.
So I just keep poking at it until, it gets into a fight, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I don't know, generally I've never really, I never was someone who's just seeking out any kind of violent shit. I always felt like I was a nice dude. You know what I'm saying? But I definitely talk shit all the fucking time.
You're a ribber. You rib people. You razz them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've been there.
For sure.
We're similar in a sense. Well, we talk about shit and we're very unfiltered sometimes.
And, too opinionated maybe.
Yeah, too opinionated.
Now, I mean, I remember a very specific moment in my life in fourth grade. These two fifth graders were walking home and for some reason, I think one of their girlfriends had said that I was cute or something. And they were yo, we're going to beat you up. And then I just remember just talking and talking and talking and making them laugh and cracking jokes. And then by the end of the thing, I said, well, you see what I did, right? And they're like, what? And I'm like, you guys are laughing and now you don't want to fight me no more. And they were like, oh man, that's fucked up.
And then that's what
and
they
then I was
to
like,
fight
and
you.
I realized oh shit, I can get myself out of some trouble with this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, really essentially your whole career has kind of been based off the fact that you are charming and witty and funny essentially. And the rap career started to take off because in the battles you took a different angle where it was with funny shit. And then eventually you delved into a little bit of comedy. You do sketch work, et cetera, which, they always say sad clowns, you know what I'm saying? Comedians come from tough places. You have to have a fucked up background in order to laugh at it, kind of.
I definitely think that humor played a big role of me kind of masking shit that I was going through maybe in my personal life.
Did you feel you try to use comedy sometimes to calm dad down maybe? Was there anything like that? You know what I mean? Hey, come on, dad, it's cool, man.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was never a fan of my shit. I could try to crack jokes, but he was just he was a very hardworking man, you know what I'm saying? And I think as I got a little older, I did understand certain shit that he did or why he was that way, you know, because when you're a man and you know that, you start dealing with more women as you grow older and stresses from work and life, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that's an excuse for what he did, but it's also he did do a lot of things for the family. You know, he always financially did provide. And this is a dude who just came to the country with nothing. And he really built himself up and built this up where we can be financially stable. You know what I'm saying?
Do you think hard work comes naturally to you or is it something you've had to work on?
No, I definitely worked on it. You know, I come from a family of hard workers, but I'm not going to say it necessarily just wore off on me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Because the funny thing is I've clowned you when we've worked in the past. I've clowned you for being lazy. But the truth be told is that you're kind of quietly a really hard worker and maybe to the point where you don't even notice it. But like I look back in your past and I hear about little things that you were doing, yeah. like, you know, starting open mics and shit like that. And like, you have a natural work ethic that sometimes you ignore.
No. For sure. This is what I would say. Like, you know me, like yeah. we know each other really well, but yeah. you know me and I'm a lazy dude. I really am. But the thing about it is, and I always have this thing in me. I don't know if it comes from like whether my culture with Korean culture or like my family or something. Like I have to be doing some shit.
Yeah.
And I always, that's why in the past years, I've always done something. I've, you know, whether it's organizing the bar exam or yeah. working on this, like projects or videos, like every week I have to have something, you know what yeah, I'm saying? Yeah. Even if it's like the most minimal shit or whatever, like, yeah. I just like, I think it's a pride thing, man. Like I always had this dream and shit of leaving like some kind of legacy or like holding down my family and shit. So that kind of has this natural thing that I always have to do. I think it kind of comes from a cultural thing, man. I do feel like, you know, with Koreans, there's like a lot of pride and shit like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, you always have to be doing some shit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of laziness, but I really think it's like, it's almost just like, we're men of leisure. We like our leisure time. And right. So I know personally, and I think you're probably the same way. Like I try to get my work done really fast
yeah.
and do it really good, really fast. So then I have more time to chill.
Right. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And I have more time to fucking whatever, chase tail or fucking get drunk or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think you're kind of, you're similar in that way.
It's scary, man, because my mom, I see a lot of similarities with my dad as I'm getting a lot older.
Mm-hmm.
Like my dad was a womanizer. Like he cheated on my mom, you know, and stuff like that. Like,
wait, are you saying that you have sex with people?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't cheat and shit. But
you don't have a girlfriend, so you don't have to worry about cheating.
Yeah. And you know, I definitely could see myself with those tendencies. Like if I had a girl, like I don't know.
Well, it's funny, when I met you, you were very pussy whipped. You had a girlfriend when I met you as a child. I mean, not as a child, but you were like probably 18, 19.
Right.
And you had like a long term serious girlfriend. And I always would kind of clown about like, oh yeah, this fool Jonathan, he's a sucker for love. Cause then I remember when you broke up with her, you had another girlfriend that you were head over heels with. And it's always head over heels. Right. But now as you've gotten older, yeah, like you do pretty good with the girls. When did that become a part of your life? Like, did you know you were pretty good with girls early on or what?
No, honestly, I'm not even that good with girls, man. Honestly, I just enjoyed the perks of being semi kind of
famous.
Semi-famous.
Yeah, like, if there's anyone that's been able to take advantage of that, it's you.
I mean, like I told you, like, you know, I grew up dating Latina girls and only in the last like 3-4 years have I really enjoyed the perks of like Asian chicks.
Of being a K-pop star?
not even a K-pop star, but that's real. Like, I, you know, I think I have game, but like, you know, everybody has something they do to get pussy.
Yeah.
Like you have to have a trade, you know. You know, I saw a good quote. Like somebody tweeted, was like, "Everybody pays for pussy. Choose your payment plan."
You
know what I'm saying? So like, you got to have some kind of skills. So like, you know, even ugly dudes pull pussy because they have something, you know. So it's like, yeah, like I love. I'm good at talking to women in a certain level, but there has to be like,
I think you and I both have the just kidding game. Like I put my quote fingers up for just kidding, where it's like, we'll say some outlandish and go, oh, I'm just kidding. You know what I mean?
That's true. We both do have the just kidding game.
So you try to like push the line as far as you can and see what you can cross and then go, oh, I'm just kidding. Unless they say yes. And then you're like, okay, cool. I'm not kidding anymore.
Well, I think we're good at just gauging people in general.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the industry we're into, what we do. I mean, but like, yeah, I knew that I didn't have like that much game too at times, you know, because like I go out with like Breezy and Jose, who are really actually really outgoing and they're really good at talking to girls too, you know, and like.
Don't dry snitch on anybody.
No. Just talking to girls. And we go out. Like I remember when we're out on tour and shit, I'm like, oh, we're gonna be a three amigos just picking the girls up. And like, there'll just be times I'd be shy as fuck to go talk to a girl. Yo, yeah. Like, I mean, I definitely got used to just like setting these traps and they come and like, like we'll be out and about and I'm waiting for like a girl to come up or something. You know?
Right. I feel you. Let's start talking about your little journey into the rap world, because like, even before all the social media stuff really took off and the YouTube channel took off, you always had pretty smart marketing ideas, which became kind of a common theme in your career when I look back.
Like so, what?
Well, like, for example, rather than just putting out a fucking EP full of songs, it was like, oh, let me make an EP that's all video game based.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? You were always thinking, even back then, before you met the people that really like became part of the team that helped you achieve what you achieved, you had these clever ideas that where you were like, yo, I'm going to make this video game EP because IGN is going to post it and it's going to be fucking tight. I'll get all these fans that nobody else has. Like little shit like that. So first and foremost, tell me, like, did you grow up listening to the rap music? Is that what you were always into?
Rap was definitely the first type of music I listened to. And I got into it late, you know what I'm saying? Like you know, like when I was growing up in LA, it was like you listen to Power or like K-Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like more on the hip-hop side. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't grow up listening to much rock until like later. I got a little older. But yeah, I grew up listening to the radio.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say I was a huge rap head. Like I was going out buying CDs or tapes.
Was like music a big part? Like music wasn't forefront of your mind?
No, definitely not. Yeah. Like I don't come from a family of music.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like my mom and my dad, like, you know, they love music, but they're not like, they didn't put me onto like soul records and shit. Like a lot of like kids I know and shit. You know?
Do you think like your penchant for being able to rap came more from like just growing up playing the dozens and clowning on people?
Yeah, I would say so.
Like you get a certain rhythm with that, right? Like clowning becomes a certain, there's a rhythm to it, and
timing
and it kind of teaches you cadence for rapping too,
for sure. I think also not even just the cadence of rapping, but what draws people to your lyrics, you know,
right,
what I'm saying, like
right.
What will people relate to and how you say it or whatever, and
that, angles
yeah and that's yeah, man. I mean, I always say this, like I still feel like such a brand new student to like rap. Even though like at this point I've been technically doing it for a long time, but I got into writing lyrics and, you know, actually recording a lot later.
Yeah.
Because like I said, like I was still pretty lazy in a sense where I was like trying to always do the easy way out, and freestyling was that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Like, and that was the thing, is that early on when I met you, it was like you were getting enough notice just from even not having music, just from like being on stage and being funny and being able to freestyle. Like that was getting you kind of enough where you could rest on your laurels a little bit.
Right.
You know what I mean? But that only lasts a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when did you start freestyling?
I started freestyling when I was like 15, I would say. You know, like in my neighborhood, like in K-Town and MacArthur Park area, there was actually like little hip hop, like boys and girls club type shit where they would bring in these OGs and shit. So I remember the first like mentors was like DJ Mark Love from like Universal Zulu Nation to like Easy Rock from Rocksteady LA Crew. And they had these like OGs like come in, you know, talk to kids and get them involved in extracurricular activity, like inner city kid shit. You know what I'm saying?
And so you learned to pop and lock before you learned to freestyle?
My little sister and Mimi, they were pop and lockers, dude.
Really?
Yeah, I have old videos of them in like Puma tracksuits.
Fedoras and shit.
Like Puma tracksuits, like literally pop locking.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, but I actually was drawn to emceeing. Like I remember we were there and they would ask these kids like what they wanted to get into. Mm. And I immediately went to the MC shit.
Did you find yourself excelling at freestyling pretty quick, or was it something you really had to work at?
Nah, I remember I was excelling like pretty quick, I would say. I mean, I was definitely working on it, but I was never shy of sounding whack.
Yeah.
Like I'm never shy of doing that kind of shit. Like I just love putting stuff out and people listening to me. You know what I'm saying? So maybe that's, you know, fucked up a lot of quality control for me throughout my career too. But I've always loved putting stuff out because, dude, life is short to me, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, why the fuck, you know, hold back on shit? Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's still to this day, you're the motherfucker that'll get drunk and hop in a cypher too. Anywhere.
It's died down. It's died down. It's definitely died down.
We used to clown so hard because here's this dude with like 100,000 Twitter followers jumping into a fucking cypher on Sunset with random people and shit. We're like, what the fuck?
It's definitely died down though.
So you start freestyling and then like, I don't know. As a 15-year-old, did you just fall? You just like got into it?
I did. I got into it. I loved attention, bro. Yeah. I was like a little attention whore in it.
Yeah.
I'd go to open mics.
What open mics did you find out about first?
I remember my first ever show was actually at Luna Soul Cafe, which is in MacArthur Park. And that was actually the same building that I eventually moved into later on in the Asbury.
Mm.
It was actually the bottom cafe, like in the front.
Yeah, yeah.
That used to be like a really known, like political, like vegetarian cafe. That was my first show.
Mm.
And then I would go to open mics and stuff like Juice, which was an event. Like it was like a thing in MacArthur Park. And I went to Project Blowed eventually.
How old were you when you found out about Project Blowed?
I was like 15, 16. It was like early. It was like right when I actually started.
Mm.
So I was still new, but like it was like a year after I started Poly or something.
And was like James already there?
Yeah. James was there the first day I went to Project Blowed. Yeah. He was already in a cypher, and I was like, I was a huge fan of James, bro.
You already knew who he was?
No, I didn't know who he was, but yeah. I was like automatically a huge fan because he stood out so much.
Yeah.
Like I remember I was hugely influenced by him because I just thought he was so particular. Like he was like kind of like a nerdy, like really smart dude.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like when you first see a cat, like kind of like idea or something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He felt like an ideas-esque
Yeah, well, because particularly at that age, well, still, but like back then when he was like super hungry to fucking freestyle, it was like, man, he was saying some off the wall shit. Like his his similes and stuff were like so creative. And he was so thoroughly LA, like freestyling about boba juice and shit. You know what I mean? Like shit that fools that weren't from LA weren't knowing about, you know?
Yeah, he was articulate. Like he was a really interesting character to see. And I just thought it was like a cool look because at the time I was so into like, you know, like rhyme sayers and shit like that. Yeah. And seeing a cat who kind of looks like that, but like he's in South Central and he was like the first dude in LA that I saw was like kind of in that realm with like rhyme sayers. I felt like,
how did you find out about rhyme sayers?
By Filipinos in like high school.
Yeah.
Like when I was in freshman year, I went to two schools. Like I went to Belmont and I also went to Marshall.
Yeah.
Marshall is like a school in Los Feliz and like Silver Lake area. So it was kind of crazy. Like I feel like that kind of molded me because like I had this like hood side with like Latinos and like MacArthur Park and shit like that. And then the other side of me was the hipster side where I hung out with kids in like Silver Lake and like Los Feliz. And that put me up on like, you know, rock bands and also like underground hip hop, like Anticon and Rhyme Sayers and shit like that.
Yeah.
So I hung out with these Filipino kids, put me up on like all the underground shit.
Is the underground shit when you first felt like, oh man, I finally have found my shit? Like, did you like really delve into it?
Super.
Yeah.
I was an underground kid.
And I remember that discovery, like that feeling of like, oh man, I have found my shit.
Yeah, bro. Like, I was like, really, I was on the Dose One shit. Yeah. Like I was underground as fuck. Yeah, like it was crazy. And I mean, that's, you know, that was even before I even knew about Project Bloat. I found out about Rhymesters, all that shit, way before Project Bloat.
Yeah, same.
And then I went to Project Bloat and saw the freestylers and I was pretty amazed, man.
Who else was there the first night that's still a familiar face to you? Was Billy there? Was Kale there?
I don't remember if Kale was there first day, but he was definitely there a few weeks at, like, you know, I remember him specifically standing out. Why Not was there.
Yeah, yeah.
Riddlor was there.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Riddlor was like, man, that fool was crazy dope. I gotta say, man, Riddlor was one of my earliest memories of a crazy freestyler.
Why? What stuck out to you?
I don't know. Like, he was just so good. Like, he just kept going at it. Yeah. James, I felt like he was very articulate and smart. He had dope lines, but he was so like focused on rhyme schemes in the early days. I felt like sometimes the flow wasn't like fully there, you know what I'm saying? Right. But like Riddlor, like he just didn't give a fuck. He went in. It was a, kind of like a train of thought flow. Like I would say James isn't really like a train of thought type of flow.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think he sees lines like four bars ahead of time and gets himself to them.
Yeah.
Whereas like some people just are going literally with whatever word is popping into their head.
That's actually more Project Bloat dudes. More Project Bloat dudes are train of thought kind of flow.
Yeah.
You know
what
I'm saying? Like like Otherwise or something. You know? He was one of those who's Otherwise who was there.
Yeah.
I like the vibe of a lot of the younger cats when I went to Bloat, like James and his crew, weird people and shit like that.
Yeah. What was it like? Were you the only Asian kid there?
No. Oh, actually, the first day I went there, Lyriflip was already rapping in there.
Oh, Lyriflip was there?
Lyriflip was the only Asian motherfucker rapping. There were other Asian kids filming.
Yeah.
Like, literally, they were mad. At the time, there were so many people filming at Project Bloat. I'm really surprised not that much footage has surfaced
from it,
Because, like, I remember, like, every week I would go in those early days, there were so many people filming.
And that's probably when cameras were first becoming kind of accessible, like video cameras.
It was, like, Hi8.
Yeah.
And like mini DV. It was transitioning into mini DV.
Yeah.
But it was mainly like Hi8. Mm-hmm. And that's how, when I went with a friend who took me there for the first time, he was a Filipino kid who would always film every week. So he has like, he's sitting on some crazy shit. But I remember I went and Lyriflip was the only dude in the cypher. I'm not going to lie, he was like not that likable.
Why?
Because he was aggressive as fuck, but everybody, he kind of always got shunned out.
I remember Lyriflip like seeing early videos of him and being like, dude, that kid seems like a dick. And then being so surprised by how fucking nice he is. But it's because his rapping was aggressive.
That's
and like
true.
Kind of like, you could tell he grew up listening to gangster rap.
It's so crazy because Lyriflip is like the nicest
He's
dude.
The nicest.
But you're right. Like, I remember when I first saw him, he wasn't a likable dude.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't automatically like someone who stood out in my head or like, he was like,
he seemed like the bad guy. He was a heel.
Yeah, but I respect Lyra because he did not give a fuck. Like he really did, would battle with people, whether he gets served or not. You know what I'm saying? Like he'd battle, he'd just go for it.
Yeah. Who was your first battle against?
At the Bloat?
Sure. At the Bloat.
Damn. I don't remember. I don't remember. Yeah. I think battling at the blow took me a little longer because I was like very intimidated over there. I used to battle a lot just at house parties and shit, you know, because I felt confident of where I was, my surroundings and who I was.
Yeah.
But when I went to the blow, I really evaluated myself.
It's a whole different level there.
It was. Yeah. It definitely was. I mean, just not even a level of rhymes and shit, but also like just the aggressiveness and confidence. Like, it was intense, man. Like, it was really hard to just jump into a cypher, I felt like.
Yeah. But then you start doing your own open mics, right?
Yeah, I started a little open mic in K-Town called G-Kun Flow.
I never realized that was you. I thought that was that one dude,
Khan. It is Kubla.
Oh, yeah, Kubla.
Yeah, it was him. It was him. But he got me involved in it. Like, I was there the first week he started it. I was, like, the dude who kind of helped him get it going, because I was like pretty much the most aggressive Korean freestyler in K-Town at the time.
Yeah.
So like he needed someone like
me.
What
a title to have. I was the most aggressive Korean freestyler.
No, it's real, because none of those kids, like honestly, that open mic was really tough, because I had to get motherfuckers to start rapping. Like I would be so aggressive. I'd be like, yo, hop on for, don't be a little bitch, bro. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I had to get fools to get it going, and they did it, you know, it was cool.
Around the time that I met you, the people kind of running the show scene in LA seemed to be, or like for underground rap, seemed to be Chinky at Fridays.
Yeah.
And you were pretty heavily involved with them. They were having you open up a lot of shows. And I remember like being like, yo, man, this fool dumbfounded, he doesn't even have any songs online. Why are they letting him open so many shows? And somebody was like, oh, yeah, they're managing him or something. And that was a rumor that's not true or whatever.
Nah.
But like, I think people always like have a desire to look out for you and help you out, because you're a likable person to be around. Why do you think that people look out for you? Like, why do you think a dude like Chinky at Fridays would take you under your wing and kind of be like, yeah, we're going to put you on every show?
I don't know. For some reason, I always felt like I've always wanted more like older brother type figures.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime I approach somebody, I'm never like a super cocky dude. Like, I always felt like the younger dude.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously.
And you were, really.
Yeah, but I'm getting older now, and obviously I'm not always the younger dude anymore. I'm actually the older dude. But yeah. I still feel like I kind of present myself a little bit like I don't know, for some reason, I still feel like that kid who's on the come up, like, you know what I mean? And with them, I also treated like that. I was very humbled, and I was like very like, yo, you know, please, I'm hungry, blah, blah. Like, yo, let me do this, you know?
Yeah.
And I just showed mad love, and I knew how to deal with cats. And I always, even with Chinky Eye too, I always felt like, you know, I was like the cool little Chino, you know what I'm saying? I was the one cool Asian kid who was like grew up with Latinos. So I always had that kind of vibe with them too. So
and I think I ask you that question in some like explore why people like to help you out, because like kids always reach out to us asking for help, and like generally giving help is something that you don't, maybe like humans don't naturally want to do that. But if you act right, people will want to help you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like you get opportunities if you act right.
I mean, yeah, and definitely, I definitely want to see something in you that makes me want to help you. Like, I mean, dude, I feel like when I see dope cats and I really fuck with them or I believe in them, like I want to help them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, whatever capacity I can.
Yeah.
But I just feel like it's one of those things, you have to meet that person halfway a little bit too. You know what I mean? Like you got to show something.
Like, I guess like when people ask for advice and help, it's like the only real advice I can give is like, be a fucking cool person, that like be nice, be cool, but like be somebody that people want to be around.
It's crazy how simple that is though.
Yeah. You know? But it's like this certain intangible that like you can't learn to be somebody that people like want to hang around with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's definitely just something that you,
but
know.
Things that blocks it is like ego and pride. Like pride fucks up people so much, man.
Yeah, most definitely.
That shit, you know, some people, that's why people can't be helped.
Yeah.
People have that, you know.
And I think that's the cool thing about you is that whether or not you liked learning in school, I think that you are inherently a lifelong learner and you are curious to a point where I would clown the fuck out of you because you'd be like, hey, man, why do you think that this works this way? Like about random shit.
Like stupid shit.
Like, you'd be like, wait, why do you think that looks like that?
How does photosynthesis work?
Yeah, exactly. That's like, really the kind of shit. Like, what do you think about this? You're a lifelong learner, though.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's crazy because I didn't learn a lot of basic shit at school. Like, really? So I do ask those kind of things, like Bill Nye questions, you know what I'm saying? Like,
Talk to me about, you met a dude who became a big influence in your life and you guys kind of became early adopters into the YouTube shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there as a part of your first big viral video that you had a great idea for. And
you're in it.
Yeah, I'm in it. I'm the over actor in it. And to this day, people still ask me if that was real. Do you think the statute of limitations is up where we can just admit that, like,
Yeah, it's not real.
Yeah, the video's not real. The spinning kick.
I told people it's not real, but sometimes I'll fuck with them and be
people
like, yeah,
people still ask me. They're like, wait, yo, was that kick real? But so, yeah, you had this great idea, and I feel like this was kind of the beginning of taking the early ideas that you had and really making them culminate into something that could exist, yeah. You know, and be a force. And so you had this idea to do a rap battle and, like, have a stunt double come in and kick somebody in the face, but we filmed it so that it looked real.
Right.
And it went viral.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't go, like, crazy viral as, if you compare it to viral videos now.
Now, but at the time.
Yeah, not even just at the time, but I guess for someone who didn't have any videos on his channel, like, that was a good, launching point.
Well, and also, when it happened, we were all in a kind of state where, like, oh, man, YouTube is whack, dude. Like, these fools that are rapping on YouTube are whack.
Well, not even whack. I just didn't even know about that scene. Like, I swear to God, I didn't even know about it. Like, somebody put me onto it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And, like, it was, like, literally, that was a trip to see that there was a world beyond that.
Cause
when that video came out, that viral joint, actually, like, some real dope, like, hip-hop heads were hitting me up. You know, like, Alchemist, like, was like, what? Yo, what's that shit? Yeah. Like, me and Ev have, like, a bet right now. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I,
like,
remember that.
So that was a trip, dude.
Well, and it was kind of like this perfect storm for you going on, because you had another good idea with the grind time shit where you're like, yo, I want to do an Asian versus Asian battle, because, like, you kind of inherently understand SEO, I think. Like, you understand virality and, like, things that will catch.
I don't, but I feel like I do, because, like, you know, Lush presented that battle to me.
Yeah.
And then at first I was like, nah, man, I'm not really trying to battle, because, you know, like, at the time, I'm not going to lie, like, I just didn't want to. I was always nervous about battling, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't always a confident dude in battling. It was just things that I kind of forced myself to do.
Yeah.
As, like, a challenge or whatever. And with that, when he presented me that battle, I was like, I don't want to do it. And then I thought, like, literally it took like 5-10 seconds. And I was like, wait a minute. Like, this could be kind of a cool thing. Cause I remember what kind of battler Tantrum was. Like, he was in the league with, like, the Bay Area dudes who were, like, super punchliney, you know, like the source with multi.
Well, he was very, like, angry.
Yeah, but very, like, multisyllabic and shit, you know, which is kind of was, like, the new era of, like, battle rappers, right? So, and I was kind of going towards that direction too. So I was like, this could be interesting. So I accepted the battle.
Yeah.
And then when we did it, I didn't realize how good it was going to be. You know?
Right. It's interesting too, like, that you say that you weren't confident in battles, because I remember going to see you battle a few different times. Like, I talked about it with Mike on the last podcast, but one time, like, in Irvine, you were battling, like, you and Lyra Flip and shit. And then, like, I remember at this small little record store where, like, Pharoah Monch was hosting.
Oh, yeah.
And you remember that? And,
yeah, like, yeah, with,
like,
Element.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing is, like, even back then, like, your intangibles stick out to people because, like, you do have a few different angles going for you. Like, one, you're Korean, which is, like, very different in the underground hip-hop scene. Two, you're funny. Like, people fucking, they root for you. You got the underdog thing going on for you, kind of, in battles, too, which helps. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so even Pharoah Monch, like, was like, oh, my God, he reached out to you and wanted to lend a helping hand, gave you his phone number. And at the time, we were like, holy shit, Jonathan's about to make it. Pharoah Monch likes him. Like, fuck.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But so, yeah, it's interesting that you say you weren't a confident battle because you always seemed very confident. You were good at it.
I mean, it was just, my heart would be pumping. I'd be super nervous up there, you know? And I think a lot of even the rhyme stuff kind of came last. Like, it was me, like, being up there and, like, being able to talk to people, but the rhyming part was, like, the last thing that came to my me when I was battling almost.
Right.
Like, it was crazy.
So it was, like, right after the Asian battle. At the time, it got, like, 100,000 views, which for battling at the time on YouTube was crazy. That was a crazy amount.
Right.
And now they get, like, millions of views.
Right,
but at
regularly.
The time, that was the first grind time video to hit 100,000 views,
for
which
sure.
was crazy. And so it was, like, this perfect storm, and all of a sudden you realize, like, this YouTube market is something that you could capitalize on, and then all these good ideas start. So just kind of talk about that journey.
It was interesting, man. You know, I was working with Brian, who's, like, we both know, and he, you know,
how did you guys meet?
We met through actually Toki Monster. Toki Monster went to, like, college with him, like UC Irvine, and she just introduced me to him because he was doing, like, pictures at the time, photographs, and I was like, okay, I could use some press photos. And I met him, and, you know, he just started talking to me about my, like, 5-year goals and stuff, and I was like, okay, I was like, I don't really have, you know, crazy goals, and I didn't really, like, I was always kind of like going with the flow type dude. And then he started, you know, telling me, like, you know, we should shoot videos, put it out on your own channel, because I didn't have any content on my channel. And he just started telling me about this world of YouTube, which I still didn't really care or really think that it was anything. And as I started making the videos, and then I started seeing more of a vision of like that world. So that's when I started collabing with some of the YouTube people, and it helped me kind of gain subscribers and a momentum.
You guys kind of went on like a boot camp almost, where he moved you up to the Bay for a while.
Yeah, I lived with him for in the Bay for a few months, and he, you know, we definitely was like almost shooting something every day and putting me through like a little boot camp. He was definitely one of the only disciplinary figures in my life, I would say, for sure.
Yeah, he was a big brother to you, but also became like, in a way, even though he's only a few years older, he came kind of like a bit of a father figure almost.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, definitely, man. I mean, I don't even, like, it's weird. Like, I don't know what role that is, I feel like, you know. It's just someone, like, more of a, just a mentor.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Brian was a good mentor to you, and it was it came right at the right time.
He was super intense, but it was kind of, like, what I needed, I would say, for my personality, because I was always able to bullshit my way out of stuff with anybody, counselors or parents. You know, I could drop out of high school and pretend like I was, the state let me go because I was too smart. I needed to graduate earlier because I was like a genius.
Yeah.
But like Brian was one of those dudes that I couldn't bullshit. Like I could like be like, oh, check. And he'd be like, checkmate. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Well, take me through like the things that happened after the spin kick. Then what happened?
We just started making content like on a regular basis. And people started fucking with it. You know, it started with the battle fans.
Yeah.
Starting to subscribe to my stuff and seeing that I was doing stuff. And then it eventually expanded outside of that.
Yeah. Well, I remember you guys had some like forward thinking ideas like Jam Session 2.0 went kind of viral.
Yeah.
Like in hindsight, it's not hugely viral. But at the time, 200,000 views was a shitload. Like I said,
For sure.
Like it was a different world back then.
All these things were
MSNBC picked up on.
Yeah.
It.
All those things were little things that helped, you know, kind of put the bigger puzzle together. You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah.
I definitely think that all those little things played a part.
Yeah,
know, for sure. And then you know, I started linking up. I started meeting people on YouTube like Wax and Timothy De La Ghetto and these people that I actually collabed with, and they actually helped me, you know, gain more and more subscribers.
What was it like when you fell in love with Wax? No, I'm just kidding. Shout out to Wax. We just pranked him on the phone.
You know what's so funny is that when Brian first played me Wax,
yeah,
he was like, "Oh, this is one of the dudes on YouTube,"
yeah,
and he played me the car freestyle.
Yeah.
I didn't even like it.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, this shit's whack, you know? And then I went back to, I think it was just because literally, like, people have this block without even, like, it's like you don't even listen, really.
Yeah.
And you just automatically hate because of a certain vibe or whatever.
Yeah.
And I hated it at first. I was like, yo. And then I listened to it. I was like, wait, this guy's actually kind of spitting bars. Like, you know, he said lines like, you know, you turn it down like a pill jar. Like, you know, he had these little things. I was like, holy shit. Like,
I remember him getting talked about on rapmusic.com back in the day and seeing the videos. And my initial instinct being like, that's lame. He's a YouTube rapper. Like, he's not really out here on like grinding and getting shows. That was my initial instinct, but then I listened and I went, wait, you know what? This is actually really dope, and I'm going to like go against my natural instinct to say this is lame, and I'm going to listen to more. And I was like, whoa, this kid's mad talented.
That's what I'm saying. Isn't that kind of crazy how people have that kind of
preconceived notion?
Dude, it's so crazy. Like, without even knowing you're doing that.
Well, dude, it's a very bloatian thing to be fucking negative initially, too.
You think so?
I think that there's a lot of like, it's a kind of a bubble that you guys were in where it's like, if it ain't the blow, I'm not fucking with it. You know what I mean? Or something.
Well, I mean, I think the new generation has a little less of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because the culture we live in with so much music around us now.
Yeah. What are some of the craziest things that have happened to you since the explosion, you know?
I don't know. I would say, man,
are there times when you just step back and you're like, man, this is weird that this is my life right now?
Yeah, for sure, man. I feel blessed, man. I definitely feel blessed, but it's not, you know, it's weird. It's died down a lot in the last 2 years. Like, because when I was first starting, it was like I was exponentially growing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
eventually you have to hit a tabletop.
Yeah, I definitely think I hit a tabletop where right now is a very, like, experimental stage again right now where I'm trying different things. And it's good that I feel like I am, you know, I mean, I am trying different things and seeing what works, you know, and nothing's necessarily like, I haven't had a viral video in so long, you know what I'm saying? But it's cool. I still feel blessed, and I'm in a weird place where there is a market for me because a lot of people haven't taken my spot, I feel like. You know what I'm saying? Like, I do shows that only a certain type of artist can get, which I'm one of the, like, a handful of motherfuckers that can get those kind of shows, whether it's like an Asian club where they want like a hip-hop act.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There's only a handful of motherfuckers who could take that spot, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like,
Database being one of them.
Data, yeah, shout out to Ben. Yeah.
No, just kidding.
But it's cool. I would say weird things like that's happened to me in the past year or two is like being in the K-pop world.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing to me. I feel like I don't know how I've managed to, you know, sneak my way into there.
Yeah.
But I feel blessed in the sense that I could be this dude who talks about drugs, weed, and shit like that and still be in that world as well. Right. Which is, that's like very taboo.
Very taboo over there. Looking back, do you feel like there were any goals or projects that were maybe a waste of time or you wish you wouldn't have gone that direction?
No. I have early projects that are fucking mad nerdy, dude. Like mad nerdy and like super unpolished.
Yeah.
But like I think all that shit has helped me towards where I'm at now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? There's definitely quality control and things you want to brand yourself with. But dude, people are moving so fast. They forget about shit. They don't care. Like they look forward. You know what I'm saying? People are really looking forward now.
Yeah.
It's kind of like it's not necessarily always the best thing. Like less and less people look into the past for like, you know, far as stuff goes.
Yeah.
You know?
No one's trying to research your history.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just want the now.
Yeah. They want the now, you know? And the few people that like are like, I loved your old shit, or like it's more like less people that are purists and shit. You know what I'm saying? Like that circle is very small. I mean, you can tell with like where vinyl has gone, and you know, think about the few people you know that are like record collectors. You know, it's like I love that shit, but it's less and less people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing, and what that's gonna mean for art in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, man, I don't know, man. Life's short, bro. Like, I, you know, even with rap, it's like I love rapping, too. It's not – I don't know if this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still a fucking confused, like, I still have the soul of a confused teenager, you know. And I want to do fucking everything, you know.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, do you feel like you're going – like, it's interesting to hear, like, oh, that you feel like it's in a downturn. Because there are a lot of people who still look at you as like, yo, you're one of the most cracking, like, unknowns in L.A., you know what I mean? Like your shit is going good. Like I said, fucking people want to give you their clothing line and shit, because like you do have a huge fan base and a huge social media following, you know what I mean? Like you have a lot of opportunities presented to you because of that. So it's interesting to hear that you think it's falling off.
But I'm not saying it's falling
not
off.
Not falling off, but that it's slowed down or whatever, however you worded it. You
I'm just being real. I mean, that's just how it, you know, people.
So what I'm saying is, do you think you're going through a little bit of a spiritual crisis right now?
No, man. I, you know, I'm very confident in who I am, what I can do.
Yeah.
I think I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I really, you know, I talk to people about this, like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. And next thing, you know, I got to really do my shit now. But personally, like, I say that shit because, you know, it's something that, like, kind of humbles myself. But really, like, what I'm really thinking is, like, yeah, I'm going to be fucking fine, bro.
Yeah.
Like, I know how to talk to people. I feel like I can make opportunities happen for myself. And I don't think I would be here if I wasn't able to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, you wouldn't be here because this is a huge opportunity for you.
No, I mean, no, but real talk, even with you, bro, even with you, like, you know, we're survivors, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, we come from a circle of, like, super struggling rappers and stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And amazing, talented motherfuckers, but, like, you know, like, they're not trying a bunch of different things. You know what I'm saying?
And,
like,
and one thing about us, I look at, there are three rappers that I've known for a long time that I consider part of my circle that will always be rapping the way that I look at it, or at least always like will remain in contact and be involved somehow. And that's you, James, and Mike, you know what I mean? And like the four of us just played a show together and it makes sense. And we were talking about this the other night when we went to dinner. It's interesting that the four of us have like kept at it because we've seen so many fucking other rappers come and go.
Right.
Or like, you know, these kids who come in, they get their buzz for a couple months and then it just dies because they don't keep it up. Because we come from a different world where it's just like persistence. You know what I mean? It's hard work and persistence.
It is. It is.
And so I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like look at all four of us. Like we still put out a lot of shit, whether it's not, even if it's not just music, like, you know, you do podcasts weekly.
Yeah.
I have a video weekly, whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? We're putting out stuff. Like Mike is just a beast. You know,
Mike
like
is very prolific.
James, he always has something, whether it's like a weekly.
And that's the thing
or,
is that we're all growing up and becoming rap adults. And James has his hands in like organizing a few different shows. Right. He's got a record label. Like we're all figuring out how to make this a career, whether or not the fucking fame ever gets to the level that you felt.
Yeah,
because you're the most famous.
No, the funny thing about it is a lot of these, you know, rap kids who are mad popping and shit, like, you know, they think we're not part of that culture, but we're actually the ones fucking pushing the culture forward, man. Honestly, we're like trying to put a lot of those kids on, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like I give in a lot of like kids their first fucking interviews, you know what I'm saying? Like, you too.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
That's so it's real shit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm basically the reason Macklemore's famous the way I look at it. No, I'm just kidding. No. But anyways, man, I'm glad to see you're still pushing and working on shit. And I know that things are going to work for you. And what all of us need to do is figure out what we really want. Because I don't think that any of us know that what we want. Do
no.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe that's always been like a problem.
The thing is that when you can be good at rapping, you can be good at a lot of different shit. Because writing is essentially, it's entertainment, it's comedy, it's writing, it's
true.
Public speaking. It's like all these things that you could work into different angles. You know
right.
what I mean? So like, who knows? I fucking want to write a novel. I want to write a movie. I want to write all these different things. I want to host TV shows. I want to do, but I also want to rap at the base of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's like, I know that I need to dedicate all my fucking efforts into one thing to make it happen. But I know if I ever just did one thing, I'd be so unhappy.
Right, right, right.
I want to do everything.
No, that's real, man.
Yeah.
It's like, that's, you know, I don't know what I want, but I know I want everything.
Yeah.
That's like kind of where I'm at, you know what I mean?
Exactly, exactly. Like, yeah. All right, well, okay.
I'm getting sadder now.
Yeah, don't get sadder.
I'm kidding.
So anyways, you're going on tour with Wax.
Yeah, yeah, December. Wax and Breezy, Lovejoy, and now Anderson .Paak.
When you guys hear this, go to, what, dumbfounded.com?
No, go to Wax website to buy tickets for the tour.
So go to wax.com.com.
Yeah, go to wax.com.com. I don't know why he has that website.
It's so funny.
waxdotcom.com.
Yeah, buddy. Well, thank you for coming in, man. I had to twist your arm for this.
No, you didn't.
No, I did. He was like, don't fucking mention Knox Teddy.
No,
I'm just kidding. None
I
of that happened.
I spilled my guts out right
None
now.
None of that happened. Yeah, I'm just happy that, like, you know, I want to clear the air, basically. When all the Knox Teddy shit went down, people on the internet incorrectly assumed that you and I had some crazy beef and stopped talking. And like, you guys are all idiots and we've always been friends. And Jonathan and I have been friends since long before that and we'll be friends forever, bro.
I mean,
there was never any beef between us.
Yeah, it's dude, with Knox Teddy is like, we're actually, me and Lee are not part of Knox Teddy anymore.
Yeah, people don't realize that. Like, nobody from the original team is really there anymore.
Yeah, I mean, Knox Teddy's still going on, but it's owned by a higher company.
Yeah, and I honestly, you know, I think that both of us learned a lot from it.
Hell yeah. It
was a
dope,
huge growing experience.
Super, super.
It was a great look for both
Everybody
of us.
Everybody was a part of it, was able to go out and do something for themselves.
We learned so much about ourselves while doing that and what our talents were. And like, you know, not, this conversation wouldn't be happening had that not
Grady
happened.
Grady would not have gotten any bitches.
Yeah, Grady would have never been getting fucking Zero. Tinder bitches. I see you, Grady. Shout out to Grady. Shout out to Zoe. Like, Knox City was a great time in our life, but like, you
Hell
guys
yeah.
can stop asking. Like, we're not a part of it anymore.
Yeah.
And Jonathan and I have no beef, so I'm glad that we got to come
it's
on
still
here.
Gonna go, it's still going to be asked, you know?
Yeah,
like,
for
I still
sure.
get asked if the kick is real.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true forever.
Yeah.
I just got a tweet today that said, yo, it's Intuition and Knox Steady is my favorite shit. And
yeah, it's like, how do I sign to Knox Steady? That's what I get all the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, oh man, so much. But yeah. I don't know. It was a great time, but I'm just glad that we got to clear the air that there's no beef and that we're still friends. We've just like,
no.
I think both of us are smart enough to let that kind of perpetuate though, because it's a good look, like to let people's imaginations run wild.
Yeah, yeah.
What's next? You got some videos coming out?
Yeah, man. You know, like, I'm going by this new name, Parker. I think that's important to know. Hopefully I'll have my website up when this comes out next week. It's going to be whosparker.com, but you can also go to dumbfounded.com. It'll redirect you there.
Are you going to change your Twitter name?
I can't change my Twitter name.
You can change the @.
No, you can't.
You can change it one time.
Are you serious?
I changed mine from Intuition Raps to @itsintuition. You can change your Twitter handle one time, so you can change it.
But should I change it?
You won't be able to get @Parker. You might be able to get @whoisParker.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So so there's an option, but that's a scary jump.
That's
dude.
So scary.
It's a scary
dude.
Jump.
That's so fucking scary.
So you guys can follow him @dumbfounded for the moment until he becomes @whoisParker, possibly. And then Facebook. What are you? Facebook.com/dumbfounded.
Yeah, I could actually change that too, but I'm kind of scared too.
Yeah.
About that.
Yeah. And then of course the YouTube channel where the bread and butter is youtube.com/dumbfounded.
Yeah.
Dumbfounded.
Yeah. I'm trying to get youtube.com/Parker. I actually submitted that.
Oh, shit. It's a big transition, man. It's a big transition.
It's scary. It's scary. I don't care, man. I mean, whatever, dude. Like, fuck it.
You'll be fine. The future's bright. My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition. You can follow me on Twitter @itsintuition, which I changed formerly from Intuition Raps. You can follow my man behind the board, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery, I am database.
Follow us as a unit at That's Kinda Neat. Facebook.com/kindaneat. YouTube.com/thatskindaneat, where Dumbfounded is going to be blessing us with his presence. And then, of course, everything wrapped up in a pretty package on kindaneat.net. Jonathan Park, Mr. Parker, thanks you for coming in.
Lee's my older brother, man.
Yeah, he is my brother that I never wanted. This was kind of neat.